like potato.
And you like potato.
You like tomato.
And you like tomato.
Potato.
Potato.
Tomato.
Tomato.
That's gonna fail.
A slight drop in unemployment and some modest job growth are good news, but after a rough and tumble week for the stock market, is it enough to alleviate fears of a double-dip recession? Plus, with the grim economic forecast and a bruising fight over the budget, what are President Obama's prospects for re-election? Welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the screaming talking heads that dominate political debate. Matt Miller is away this week. I'm Terrence McNally, your moderator in the center. Robert Shearer on the left, Tony Blankley is on the right, and with us is guest panelist Christia Friedland from Thomson Reuters Digital. The big story is the drop in the markets. On Thursday, markets worldwide took a sharp dive. The Dow lost more than 4% of its value, its worst day in 3 years. And today, as we went to air on Friday afternoon, the markets continued to sputter downward. There was a bit of good news today. Unemployment went down and jobs went up in July, but only slightly. The jobs report appears to have prevented another day like yesterday on Wall Street. But is it enough to calm investor fears that we're entering another period of recession? Later on the show, we're going to talk about the political implications of all this for President Obama and lawmakers on Capitol Hill. But first, let's go around to each of you for your assessment of what's been happening this week and your forecast for what's ahead. Bob, let's begin with you.
Well, I've been the gloomy one on this show and sometimes told, you know, the sky is falling. I do think we're headed for a double-dip recession, and the reason is that and I think it was ironic that Wall Street validated this view, which is that the government activity was taken off the table. That's really what the debt deal is all about, not Fed activity. And the Federal Reserve can still print money and still keep money very cheap. But the prospect of the U.S. government intervening in any substantial way to create jobs, to improve the economy and so forth, I think has been taken off the table, and the big discussion is about where to cut. My own view is we shouldn't be cutting. We should be spending more. And I think Wall Street and people who invest have expressed that pessimism. And I think, you know, the irony in the current situation is we have the great disconnect. We have corporations that are doing very well with their overseas operations, General Electric, Apple, and so forth. They're sitting on $2 trillion of money that they're not investing, but they're not doing jobs here. The reason they're not doing jobs here, there's no consumer pull. 70% of the activity comes from consumers. The reason there's no consumer pull is because we have a housing meltdown and we have the foreclosure crisis, and that's holding back people's confidence in the construction industry and so forth. And this administration and its Republican opponents refuse to address that issue. What was the whole economic meltdown that drove the debt up by 50% was a result of a housing crisis manufactured, and it has not been addressed in any serious way.
Tony?
Yeah, it must be cushy to sit on $2 trillion. Hey? I wonder what it feels like. I think that one of the big disconcerting factors both in Europe and the United States is the sense that the policy players, the central banks, the Federal Reserve, the Congresses and parliaments sort of seem to be out of policy proposals, and not quite but almost. And I think it's a little spooky to think that we're just going to sit back and let things unfold, and yet there don't seem to be a lot of quivers left or arrows left in the quiver. And the president, our president, has kind of put himself in a cul-de-sac, an odd one for a Democratic president. Normally, when you have contraction and high unemployment, Democratic policy is big spending and big jobs programs. He's kind of moved himself away from that by endorsing the alleged deficit package. So he's got very small bore shots to fire on the typical Democratic approach to these problems. And both as a messenger and as a policy, he's kind of just passive. And I know Democrats are uncomfortable with that. And on a policy basis, it doesn't seem to be a happy place to be.
Mm-hmm. Now, Christia.
So just a quick political comment on what Tony had to say. First of all, I agree, except isn't it a little bit disingenuous to lay the blame chiefly at the feet of President Obama for focusing on deficit reduction rather than demand stimulation? He was kind of pushed into that. You're quite right that he probably didn't push back forcefully enough. all of which is to say, you know, the big message from the markets this week, and it's very interesting that we get that message in the week that I think we probably would have predicted would be dominated by reaction to the debt ceiling debate. The big message from the markets is we've spent the summer talking about the wrong economic issue. The markets are not political. They're not partisan political. And what they've said is what the market participants are really worried about is not the deficit. Right now, the U.S. government is able to borrow money at laughably low rates. The 10-year bond is around 2.5%. You know, if I could borrow money at 2.5%, I would be pretty happy. So there's not huge concern about the creditworthiness of the U.S. The The really big concern is the lackluster recovery both in the United States and in Europe. And when it comes to this specific week, actually the trigger, interestingly, we all were sort of focused on Washington, and was the Washington political fumble going to be the one that sent the global economy off the edge? Actually, it was a political fumble in, of all places, Frankfurt. And the person who dropped the ball was Jean-Claude Trichet, the head of the European Central Bank, where there is incredible weakness right now in Italy and Spain. And the ECB, thinking to calm the market, said, yeah, we're intervening in the European bond market, but we're only intervening for Ireland and Portugal. And the markets were really looking for some comfort on Italy and Spain, the two big ailing European beasts.
Okay, Christy, I'm just going to add that Italy is the eighth largest economy. Spain is the 12th. So we're talking about some real size there. Tony, I'll let you come back to Christy.
Yeah, I was just going to say it was an odd observation that because we're able to borrow, we should. I thought that was one of the reasons we got into the real estate problem, that people who shouldn't have been borrowing, which is most of us, borrowed money to buy houses we couldn't afford. Now, because of some very fluky circumstances, rushes to safety, et cetera, it's true the U.S. Treasury can go out and borrow money. The question is, given that we already have $14.5 trillion, soon to be $16 trillion of debt, whether it's wise to further indebt ourselves. And that, I think, is the question both in Europe and the United States. There's a debt overhang and the need for very tight austerity trumping or not trumping the normal Keynesian policies. And it looks like it might be trumping it, but we'll find out when we fall deeper into the pit.
Christy,
well, it's only trumping it because that's the political choice. I mean, worrying about the deficit right now, chiefly, primarily, is like being really concerned about your high cholesterol levels when you have a gaping, bleeding wound.
Yeah. Maybe we have both.
I'm going to go over to Bob, but I did want to say that the government was the one that shed jobs last month. They lost 37,000 jobs. So that's where stimulus isn't happening. Bob Scheer?
Right. And half a million since May 2009. Half a million government jobs have gone since May 2009.
Okay. So, look, as far as these government jobs, obviously the correct thing to do is for the federal government and the Fed to do what they did for the banks and bail out the states. And state governments, I mean, this is so simple, I don't even know why I have to state it. State governments right across, Republican, Democrat, Texas, California, they're all in trouble. Okay? They're all cutting jobs that are needed. People who work and spend their money, firemen, teachers, what have you, you know? So clearly, you don't want to cut aid to the states. You want to give more money to the states, make them whole the way you did the banks. And I think Sharon's absolutely right. The loss of jobs on the state level is, and on municipal level is appalling. But I want to back up what Tony said, and I don't think we should let Obama off the hook. The accepting this debt deal is an acceptance of, what did you say, Tony, small bore?
Yeah, small caliber shots at a
I
big
mean,
problem.
It has basically,
from your liberal, you know, from the Keynesian point of view.
I understand, but I think you're absolutely accurate. What happened in this debt deal, and I agree with Chris that it was a phony and it didn't have to happen, and Obama should have just, if push comes to shove, and invoked the 14th Amendment and said we're going to pay our bills. And that's the language I think is quite clear. The Republicans keep claiming that all we have to do is release the private sector and jobs will come. Well, Wall Street gave a resounding answer this time. They said, you promise all these cuts, fine, but we have to see an economy that's sinking. And even if you read the Wall Street Journal, you know, columnists usually are cheering for the free market. They're all saying, wait a minute, the government opting out of this is hardly reassuring. It's frightening people like mad. So I think Tony's basic point is valid. that Obama has surrendered the main program of the Democratic Party, going back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. This is not a party that believed you should have deep cuts at a time of economic crisis. On the contrary, this is a party that thought the very purpose of federal government was to protect people, protect jobs. This is the legacy that was left over from Franklin Delano Roosevelt. People tend to forget, and I do think Obama betrayed it. Now, obviously, the Republicans up the ante. They were playing hardball, but he did not rise to the occasion.
FDR did the same thing in 1937, didn't he? Any historians on the line? Yeah, I mean, there was a big talk about deficits and inflation, and he reversed his stimulus, and that was the Roosevelt recession.
Very temporarily.
Yeah, I think Terrence is absolutely right. I mean, I think what's really terrifying is when the financial crisis happened and we started talking about, is this a second Great Depression, there was a real chorus of people saying, well, the good news is we've learned our lesson from the Great Depression. Ben Bernanke is a student of the Great Depression. You know, we're never going to do it again. And yet, actually, you're seeing, and not just in the United States, but also, for example, in Britain, an almost textbook repetition of the mistakes of the 30s.
Okay. What if anything, can we learn from previous double-dip recessions from the early 80s?
I mean, there was actually a triple dip recession. You know, you had, Carter had two, and then Reagan, of course, had the big one in 81, 82. And, you know, we obviously suffered until Volcker and Reagan induced that deep recession by higher interest rates and you know, we were having inflation and high unemployment, which we're probably going to be moving to within 6 months to 18 months now. So,
okay.
Yeah, I think that this is hauntingly like 79, 80, except it's sort of multiplied by some horrible factor.
Right.
Can I jump in?
Bob wanted to do a quick one.
No, Christy, jump in.
To quickly say, I think that there's one very important difference between today and the 1980s, which we really should bear in mind. The recession that we have experienced, the economic weakness we are still experiencing, this is the hangover from a financial crisis. And if you look at the economic literature, a financial crisis creates a very different kind of recession from the one you get in your normal business cycle. And that is precisely because of what Bob was pointing out at the beginning of our discussion, which is it leaves this huge overhang of debt. And really what's going on is this deleveraging process, and that is very slow and very, very painful. That's why it's taking a long time. If you look at the history of countries recovering from financial crises, it on average takes between 5 to 7 years. So it's harder. It's harder than your normal business cycle downturn.
And you're right, but look at the panic of 1893 and the recovery of what, 96, 97, which is somewhat similar to our crash of 2008. And you did have a financial crisis, you did have a deleveraging of real estate values, and it was surrounded then by a railroad misfeasance of investment, sort of like we had misfeasance of real estate investment this time. But that time, we let nature take its course, and it was over in 4 or 5 years. I think one of the worries now is that by trying to mitigate the hard landing, we may simply be delaying it.
Bob has a quick one.
Yeah, Tony, it's just simply not true that we have mitigated the pain. On the contrary, we made the banks whole. We did very little in the way of mortgage forgiveness. We did very little to help the homeowners. I don't know if we have to take our break, and why our moderator is looking frantic, but I would like to return to this point after the break.
We will. Let us know what you think about the state of the U.S. and global economy. Go to kcrw.com/LRC. Up ahead, more on the markets, more on the economy, and the political implications for Obama and others. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center. Welcome back to Left, Right, and Center. Matt Miller's off this week. I'm Terrence McNally, host of the public radio program Free Forum and a writer for Alternet. With me is Robert Scheer, the author of The Great American Stick-Up and editor at TruthDig.com, Tony Blankley, columnist for The Washington Times, and Chrystia Freeland from Thomson Reuters Digital. We're continuing to discuss plunging markets, weak domestic global economy, unemployment. What should President Obama do? What should lawmakers do? Bob.
Yeah, I want to insist on this point at the risk of being the broken record, and as some of our commenters on our site point out, but this is different than all others because of something that happened to capitalism that didn't exist before, called the securitization of debt, and particularly mortgage and consumer debt. And I just happened to be in San Diego for the last week and talking to people, real estate people and so forth. And this is I'm talking about in a community that was basically a white community, established homes, people flying the flag, people who quite recently had worried about their second and third jobs, had big plans, home business, this thing and so forth. And the mood is absolutely desperate. And this one real estate person, very well experienced, said, this is a depression. I don't care what the politicians are saying. And this is the person who actually represents banks now as much as anyone else. And the problem is, she said, just about every home here is in danger of foreclosure. And this is an established community with good schools and what have you, you know. And she said, you know, the problem is that the banks are holding so many of these mortgages through all the securitization, the packages, that if it starts to get better, they just dump more. And so we have not in any serious way during this crisis address the source of the problem, whether Tony thinks it's people who shouldn't have been allowed to buy the houses or the banks manipulated them, which is my position. The fact is we have this enormous housing stock. Housing represents the main source of people's confidence, of their wealth, of their security, of their consumption patterns. We have not addressed the housing crisis. As a result, consumption has not come back in any strong way, and that's why the corporations don't want to invest and hire people and put them into jobs. And for the life of me, I can't understand why Congress, the president, and others have not made this the central question, the loss of wealth of ordinary Americans because it was hinged on something that was made a poker chip, your home mortgage.
Tony? Robert, you're absolutely right on the problem. I mean, there's probably somewhere between, $4 and $6 trillion worth of mortgages out there that, you know, that went through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that may be good, not be good. The banks still have a lot of that, most of that, still on their books. They've improved their liquidity by buying a lot of treasury notes in the last 2 years, but they're still holding a lot of that. And, of course, all of us who own residential real estate are feeling poorer or desperately because of the fact you can't sell your homes and you can't and the basis of your wealth is gone. The question is that such a huge amount? I think it probably is, that there's no way to fix it other than to have the banks eventually foreclose and the mortgage holders eat the loss and perhaps millions of Americans are ground down by this. But eventually you've got to deleverage this shocking level of bad mortgages that are sitting out there, and we haven't done that yet, and the Europeans hold that paper, and the Asians hold that paper, so I agree with the problem. I'm just not sure that there's a solution.
Christia.
Well, there is a rare moment of all of us agreeing, I agree with the problem, too. There are two clear solutions, and the choice between them is going to be very political. Who eats the loss? Is it going to be the homeowner, or is it going to be the banks? And as the situation is currently set up, it's going to be the people who took out the mortgages. I think that what Bob would advocate is the banks being forced to take more of a haircut on those mortgages. And that isn't happening. The problem is actually even bigger than the United States, because a very big part of what is pulling down Europe is a very similar set of issues and a very similar set of banks having lent too much, a real estate sector that is falling apart. And as in the United States, the government, in this case, Europe overall, choosing to bail out the banks at the expense of, in the European case, of sovereign governments and of citizens of the different countries.
Okay, Christy, before we go to the political, what this all means politically, any other big headlines about what's going on in Europe at this moment?
Well, really, I think that the really big European question right now is, what is Europe, in particular, what is Germany and what is the Bundesbank going to do about the ailing European economies? Greece, it's so small, it doesn't matter so much. The same is true of Ireland. That's even true of Portugal. Europe overall could eat those losses. But what's going to happen if Italy, in particular, but also Spain, go overboard? And the signals this week were Europe wasn't really ready to cover those losses. And that's really, you know, the core reason why the markets got so terrified.
Okay. Let's switch the political meaning of this, at least as we predict. Tony, what do you think President Obama's prospects for reelection are in the wake of the battle over the debt ceiling, the continued economic mess? You've been writing about his vulnerability on and off for more than a year.
Yeah, I have thought, and I was writing last December, January, February, and March, that contrary to the conventional view that he was a sure thing for re-election, that he had very high vulnerabilities, that the economy wasn't getting better, that incumbents usually get tagged with that, and that if the Tea Party could focus the deficit issue and engage the president on the deficit issue, we wouldn't divide the Republicans. We'd push the president to a position that would be untenable for him. That has happened. And this week, Politico magazine, which is sort of the ground central for liberal conventional judgment in Washington, their editor, Jim Vandehei, and their chief White House reporter, Mike Allen, did a big piece on Obama's electoral vulnerability. And I think we're beginning to see a pivot to recognize, not that he's going to lose, we're a year and a quarter away from the election, but that he could lose. And it begins to me, and has for a long time, begun to feel like 79.
Anyone else on the political? Yeah, Bob.
Yeah, first of all, I think Obama should be vulnerable. I mean, that's what democracy is all about. And he really should have focused on jobs and making the economy whole. And he should have challenged the Republicans. I think, however, the CBS New York Times poll backs this up. Obama is not being the one primarily blamed. First of all, George W. Bush deservedly is getting more of the blame. I would throw in Bill Clinton, Robert Rubin, Phil Graham, and a whole cast of characters that preceded them. But Obama did not create this mess, and the American public seems to understand that. They also gave Congress the lowest approval rating. I think the disapproval was 82% or something, and the lowest in the 40 years or so that the New York Times, CBS have been conducting this poll, and Obama's ratings remain respectable, really where they were just before bin Laden was captured, which boosted him up. He has, I think, 48% approval, 47% not, or the other way around by 1%. So given all of the trauma in this country, Obama seems to at least be liked and respected. But I agree with Tony, come Election Day, and we haven't turned this thing around, they're going to look to punish people, but I think they're going to punish the Republicans every bit as much. And the Tea Party people in the latest poll, the Tea Party has really increased its, the negative view of the Tea Party has increased dramatically, and you don't have to be a genius to figure out these people were all focusing on something called cuts and not on jobs. And so at the worst, I think Obama will be held accountable for being too weak in following their lead, but he won't be blamed for having led them.
So will it be all incumbents in the target?
Well, I personally believe so, but you can ask someone else.
Tony?
Right now, incumbents are paying a price, but come election time, it's usually a judgment on the incumbent president in a presidential election, and usually, but not always, but usually his party moves with him, either successfully or unsuccessfully. So, it'll be a decision by the public on whether Obama's done a sufficient job. And if they say no, then Republicans will probably hold the House and they'll probably take the Senate and the White House. And if they think he's done a decent job, then I think the Democrats will still lose the Senate, but the House could be competitive.
Christia?
I think there's going to be one other factor that comes into play. So, I think in the short game, actually, rather surprisingly, it turns out that Obama has not done a bad, purely political job in the whole debt ceiling debate, and that CBS New York Times poll is the evidence of that. So, he succeeded in playing it in such a way that people got the message that the Republicans were the ones being intransigent. So in the longer term, though, Tony and Bob are absolutely right that the presidential election is in large part a referendum on how is the economy doing, how is the job situation, and that is looking pretty bleak. But I think it opens up a big opportunity for all of the candidates. If someone can come up with some really convincing ideas and be really persuasive that he or she has a plan for jobs, I think that is going to be the winning ticket. And there's still some time to go before the fall of 2012. Obama is still the president. That's what they should be focusing on, and not just the rhetoric, but some actual programs.
Quick response, Tony.
Yeah, the New York Times poll seems to be the feel-good story for liberals this summer. The all average of polls, shows that to be an outrider. We'll find out. I mean, the all average of public media polls has got the president down about six and a half points, positive, negative. This one is good news. I suspect, I haven't looked at it yet, but I assume that typically the New York Times at this point is polling all adults, not just registered or likely voters. They're probably overweighting Democrats, which they often do, and they get these results that are very good feeling for liberals during the season, and then they're always surprised at the election time
okay.
when reality comes.
Thanks, Tony. Let us know what you think about any or all these topics at kcrw.com/LRC. We've reached that time again for our end of show Left, Right, and Center rant featuring pet peeves from across the ideological spectrum. Christia, you got about 20 seconds. It's your soapbox.
Jobs, jobs, jobs.
That's it. Very good. Tony, you got a little more.
I won't need it. I'll give some of my time to Christian if she wants it. This is a wonderful moment. Everybody has left Washington for hopefully a month, and it'll be fun to not worry about what Washington's going to do for at least a few weeks.
And luckily the FAA is back, so they'll actually land wherever they're going. Robert Scheer.
Yeah, as the economy collapses and there's so much pain out there, I wonder about, there are villains in this, and we don't pay any attention to them. Where is Robert Rubin now? One of the geniuses that said deregulation. Where is he, fly fishing in Montana? The guy who went on to work for Citigroup and make $10 million a year. Where's Phil Graham, the Republican leader who went to work for UBS Bank, and his wife Wendy Graham, who was on the board of Enron, the geniuses that told us, oh, let's the markets be the markets and so forth. Where's Lawrence Summers, who got $8 million from hedge funds and from Goldman Sachs while he was advising Obama? And just simply no accountability. The people who engineered this crisis, who ushered in the radical deregulation, have gotten off scot-free. There's no prosecution. There's no accountability. And we're left squabbling with the Tea Party about, this little cut or that little cut.
And what I was going to say at the top of the show was this crisis is nearly not just about the markets and their drop yesterday. The market is a symptom or a thermometer, and the U.S. and it turns out most other governments love dealing with symptoms, and they have trouble with root causes. I was thankful to see that all the panelists today actually went backed up and started talking about root causes. Just for people to remember, the word radical actually means dealing with roots. And so I'm going to be the center radical and say we've got to start dealing not just with symptom but with root causes. That's all the time we have left for Left, Right, and Center. Thanks, as always, to our panelists Robert Scheer, Tony Blankley, and Christia Freeland. Jeff Rogers produced today's program with assistance from our technical director, J.C. Swadek. I'm Terrence McNally. Thank you for listening, and tune in again next week for more Left, Right, and Center.
If we have a button that might break my heart. Oh, so if you like pajamas,
I'll
wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
Oh, we know we need each other so we